What's up, everybody? You are listening to a very special mini-sode, a special extra episode of No Coast Cinema here on WGN Plus. We are your guide to cinema here in the city of Chicago. I'm Tom Hush.
And I'm Connor Cornelius.
And we're so excited to be doing this extra little thing we're doing because it is that time of year again. It's Oscar season!
Get the jazz hands out.
I'm gonna win an award and dunk George Clooney.
You're gonna finally get acknowledgement for your art.
But the Oscars are still white. They tried, but it's still pretty white.
But they're trying, god damn, and god bless them at the same time.
All right, Oscar season 2018, coming off the heels of a pretty incredible year in film, both incredible in good ways and incredible in bad ways.
Now, Tom, is that a reference to the fact that Ferdinand was selected for Best Animated Feature?
Yes, that was that was what I was going for. A lot of things happened in 2017, both with movies and things surrounding movies, and this is going to be a pretty interesting Oscar season. I think maybe when we get after the actual event, we'll talk more about the effect of the Time's Up and Me Too movements, and also this post-Harvey Weinstein Hollywood and the effect that it's had on the award show. We already got to see what happened with the Golden Globes. You know, there were a lot of big moments, a lot of call-outs, a lot of, you know, inspiring moments for people who are saying enough is enough in terms of the horrible misogyny in Hollywood. And, you know, it's a step forward. Is it going to fix everything? No, I think there's a long road ahead. But I think we're in an interesting place with movies. But anyway, for this, we wanted to talk a little bit about the nominees, who we want to pick to win, and also who we think is going to win. It's we're doing a difficult thing here.
Yeah, but I think what we're going to concretize our votes as the picks of who we think is going to win, and then maybe we'll throw in a quick sidebar of who we think should win, because right, they're not going to really coincide.
Isn't that weird, though? Every year with the Oscars, I sit down and I'm making my list, and I'm just like, do I go with who I think is going to win or who I want to win?
It's an age-old conundrum.
I mean, it's this. I mean, as the vote, when the Academy votes, they vote for who they want to win, right?
Right.
But as us, you know, sitting on the outside, simply, you know, we're going to be at home, weighing in, and we're going to be sitting at home, like, watching it on TV. It's kind of an interesting thing to try and do a little bit of guessing. So, without further ado, let's jump into these categories. So, Connor, we decided that we are not going to cover every single category. We're going to be looking at about 10 of them.
Right. And they're a little bit more of things that we have a say in, right? Because we haven't seen a lot of the things that are going to be getting awards this year.
Absolutely. There's a smaller categories, like short documentary feature, even best foreign language film. A lot of those movies have not gotten a commercial release in the U.S., or it's difficult to get out and see them without having to go find a copy or something like that.
And then in other situations, they're just absolute runaway categories, like best song, best animated feature. Coco, Pixar's new movie Coco, is going to win the Oscar for that.
Yeah, I mean, and we'll touch on those nominees, because it really is, you know, they're not really putting up their best, if you ask me, but, you know, only so much you can do, I suppose, with best animated feature sometimes. You know, it depends on what's released that year. But we're obviously going to focus on the big ones. And
the more contentious ones.
Right. And hopefully give you insight into what we're thinking is going to win, maybe help you make your own Oscar ballot. So let's start with the biggest one right away. Best Picture.
All right.
This is the one that everybody wants to get right. You know, you can get a lot of those other ones wrong, maybe Best Actor, Best Director, but if you can guess Best Picture, you feel kind of like a fucking genius. Like,
yeah.
Like, my finger is on the pulse of cinema.
It's like before the playoffs, guessing who wins the Super Bowl.
Yeah, I mean, and it sucks, because every year I tell myself, I don't get the Oscars. Screw the Oscars. You know, they never get it right. They're always picking these types of movies. They give into Oscar bait, and it's easy to just, like, ignore it. it's impossible to ignore the Oscars. But I get swept up in it.
But I also think that this year's, it's kind of a testament to how great of a year it was for movies, 2017, because I'm not going to really be upset by any of the, like, if I'm wrong in another, you know, another movie that I didn't pick ends up winning, I don't really think, there's no, this isn't like a La La Land situation, I don't think, where I'm going to be pissed if one thing wins over another.
That's true, yeah. I think, you're right, it is a really strong year. This is a pretty diverse group of films here that tackle things that I never would have expected to see being in Best Picture. You know, I guess I'll say I famously, pseudo famously in my own head.
It's famous.
Disagree with a lot of the Oscars picks in the past. My biggest bugaboos are Crash in 2005, which is a big one that a lot of people, well, I think it was the 2006 Oscars, Crash came out, like, you know, I don't even remember because it was such a bad goddamn movie. But that won Best Picture one year, and also I really don't get why Forrest Gump ever won Best Picture.
It's
Oscar bait, deal with it.
Yep.
It's
no arguments
fine.
There
it's not that I hate Tom Hanks. It's just, it's baby boomer pornography, okay? And let's leave it at that. All right, so this year, the nominees for Best Picture are Call Me By Your Name,
Darkest Hour,
Dunkirk,
Get Out,
Lady Bird,
Phantom Thread,
The Post,
Shape of Water,
and Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri. That one already wins the award for longest name of the bunch. So congratulations,
Three
Billboards.
And I'm glad that they put it last, not just because it's alphabetized.
Is it? Oh, shit, it is alphabetized. I mean, that makes sense. All right, so Connor, out of all these nominees, and again, strong set of nominees,
yep.
Who is your pick?
There's no way in my mind that any movie will win Best Picture this year. It's going to be The Post, Tom. It's going to be The Post. And I'll tell you why.
Are you dead serious?
I'm dead serious.
All
it's
right.
going to be The Post. And
lay it on me.
I'll tell you why. Notwithstanding the, you know, Spielberg directing, having Tom Hanks and Meryl Streep be in a movie together, have the hosts of Mr. Show together, which was sort of a treat to see. I think that this movie is so timely, even though it was set back, you know, decades ago, before Watergate, when the Washington Post was a relatively unknown paper. It's described in the movie as just a mom and pop paper, you know. It's so timely. It really reaffirms the importance of the media in being able to call out what the government is doing. And it really reframes, in my opinion, in a year that was fraught with our government fighting and damning the media. I don't think that the fact that it is set in an older time period and it's so relevant to today. Meryl Streep's character is the owner of the Washington Post at the time.
And she's the first female to ever own a major newspaper like that, correct?
Yeah.
Her character, yeah.
And just her role, just having a female role being in such a position of influence with all of the conversation that's going around with gender equality in Hollywood. There's not really another movie in my mind that addresses the problems that we witnessed in 2017 in such a, I don't know, just in such an interesting way. And in my opinion, there's definitely been no other movie besides, you know, Get Out, probably, that addresses that. And there's no way that I will be flabbergasted, and I'll say that. I'll be flabbergasted if The Post doesn't win Best Picture.
I appreciate the argument, but here's my problems with it. And I'm not saying that The Post is a bad movie at all or that it shouldn't be nominated, but how many times do we have to see this movie? It's a prestige picture directed by Steven Spielberg,
right,
starring Meryl Streep and Tom Hanks, two of easily the most likable people in Hollywood of all time. Meryl Streep, I think, is up there with like the most decorated actress in cinema ever in terms of Academy Awards. And that's not to say that they don't turn in good performances here. And I mean, you could put Meryl Streep in Into the Woods and she still got nominated. And that movie is terrible.
It is.
And so it's a testament to Meryl Streep that she can be put into pretty much any situation and still be really fun to watch and really interesting and engaging because she's Meryl Streep. It's what she does. My problem is that The Post, how many times have we seen this movie before?
A bunch.
All the President's Men. Spotlight from only a few years ago. And I understand its timeliness, and I think that's why it is a good movie to watch, and people should get out there and watch it. The Post is a great flick. But my thing is that there's nothing, it doesn't push a whole lot of boundaries. It is representative of the year, but in terms of filmmaking, it's so standard.
No, I agree with you, Tom, but I would rebut your argument with how many times have we seen this movie? How many times have we seen the Academy give Best Picture to a movie that we've seen hundreds of times before?
That's true. And I mean, that's what it comes down to, is that we're doing the pick for what's going to win. We're hedging our bets here. So, I mean, initially, my initial thoughts on Best Picture were kind of coupled with Best Director, because they often go hand in hand in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
I originally saw two scenarios. One, The Post wins Best Picture because timeliness and Steven Spielberg and Meryl Streep and Tom Hanks and yada, yada, yada. And then Guillermo del Toro wins for Best Director because they kind of owe him something after 25 years of beautiful filmmaking that he has not been recognized for formally by the Academy. The other scenario I saw was The Post wins Best Picture because of everything said above, and then Jordan Peele wins Best Director because he came in with a film debut that absolutely shook everybody out of their, you know, out of their skulls, not only from a creative standpoint, from a business standpoint,
and from when it was released in the year, February.
I mean, as much as Deadpool carved out that February, Get Out came in and did it with something that was a lot more forward thinking and a lot more interesting for a lot of audiences. But I'm going to give you my pick right now, and I think this is going to win it. And it's going against my initial impressions. I think it's going to be The Shape of Water. I think The Shape of Water will get Best Picture.
And this movie has been nominated for 13 Oscars
this
year.
It leads the pack.
Yeah.
It has the most nominations. It's not going to set any records for number of nominations, but it leads in nominations. It is, I think, all around something that the Academy can get on board with. It's a very classic tale. It's very old Hollywood, but it's for this idea of rebranding the Academy as a more forward-thinking entity. It is genre. It is so heavily genre film. It's about the love story of a mute woman and a fish man, which on paper sounds crazy. But the thing is that Guillermo del Toro does that. That is literally what he does best, is make these beautiful fairy tales. And it's full of great performances. And I think it would be a pick for the Academy that would bring in a lot of goodwill for them. Now, Get Out would also do that, because Get Out is also very genre, from a budding filmmaker taking on
Social horror.
Yeah, the joie de vivre, I think, the zeitgeist, the spirit of the times of 2017. I think Get Out is that movie. But for me, while Get Out was my favorite movie of the year, I think Shape of Water is another one of my favorites that I really enjoyed, and I think it will get that Best Picture.
All right.
Let's move on to Director, which we touched on a little bit. What do you got, Connor? Who do you think gets it?
All right. Guillermo del Toro.
Agreed.
I'm throwing it to Guillermo del Toro.
This is his moment. This is his moment to finally get recognized for everything he's done over the last couple of decades.
And I would like to just say, because we're not going to be doing production design, we're not going to be talking about that, but the way that that movie is made, it, like you said, it's kind of a classical story of, you know, love between two star-crossed people. The way that movie was made, I've never really seen anything like it.
Unbelievable. And for the amount of money that it was made for.
Yeah.
The budgets were the budget of Pan's Labyrinth, which came out, I want to say,
2007?
Yeah, 2006, 2007, somewhere in that mid-2000s. That it had virtually, Shape of Water and Pan's Labyrinth had virtually the same budget.
And not adjusting for inflation, that's incredible.
Yeah. Guillermo del Toro knows how to work with less, because he came up the independent international cinema. Mm-hmm. That's what he was doing. He was doing international cinema, and he's always had that sensibility about him. So, and he's surrounded by incredibly talented people that he works with frequently, and he does a really good job, and he makes it happen. This is his year. This is his year to be recognized for Best Director, and I think he's a shoo-in.
So we're agreeing on this, but as I scroll down the list, it's heavyweights.
It really, I mean, Paul Thomas Anderson, Greta Gerwig with a fantastic debut in Lady Bird, Chris Nolan, and Jordan Peele, again, fantastic debut with Get Out. I mean, this is probably one of the biggest best director categories I've seen in a long time, and Steven Spielberg isn't even involved.
Nope.
Which is great. It is. It's crazy and great. It's great.
It's great.
Great.
Slap a copyright on that.
Because Steven Spielberg, he's an American treasure. He's made some of the greatest films, the greatest American films of all time, easily one of the greatest American filmmakers of all time. But he's on the bottom end of that bell curve. He's making good movies, but they're standard. Even Bridge of Spies, which was a really solid movie written by the Coen brothers, to me wasn't anything particularly special. It was just good.
Like you said, it's prestige pictures at this point for him.
Yeah, he's just, and now he's got Ready Player One, and he's doing 80s nostalgia. He's literally gone into a full circle. How much more meta can you get with making a movie about a book that's heavily inspired by Steven Spielberg, that's directed by Steven Spielberg?
Yeah, like, that's full circle. And it's a flat circle at that. But
you're listening to Time.
You're listening to Time. Nothing matters. Let's all walk into extinction hand in hand. Anyway, to see this list of nominees for the Best Director role, of these relative newcomers, knowing that Spielberg could have been nominated and wasn't, it's definitely encouraging. To your point that Hollywood is trying to bring its award, its most coveted award program to, you know, newer audiences and trying to progress it a little bit.
Yeah. And let's just be honest. These are the people who were making, you know, and I'm not a believer in meritocracy. Some people are like, well, it doesn't really matter, if ethnicity they are or what gender they are. It does matter because it just does. But at the end of the day, it is merit here because Greta Gerwig did turn out one of the best young adult focused films I've ever seen.
Yeah.
Lady Bird is fantastic. I loved it.
And she's only one of, I think, five female directors to ever be nominated for an Oscar in the 100+ years that cinema has existed.
And then same over to Jordan Peele. He is of a very small group of African American men who have been nominated for Best Director. So the fact is that we're pushing ourselves forward here, and Paul Thomas Anderson is great.
Yep.
We figured he was going to be in there. He's one of the masters. I really don't think he cares if he wins or not.
Yeah.
Chris Nolan, I'm pretty sure, doesn't realistically care, but he
knows what he made.
Yeah. He knows what his body of work is, and he knows that he has his fans out there. Actor in a leading role.
Yeah.
So now, this is
speaking of moving things forward. Let's take it back a little bit.
Yeah.
Because Hollywood's gotta dish it out to their boys.
Yeah. It's three people that could have thrown a dart and it probably would have landed on them.
Right.
Like, you know what I mean? It's just very
heavyweights.
But we do have two surprise nominees. So at the top, let's start with the people who we figured were going to get nominated anyway.
Daniel Day-Lewis is in a movie. He's getting a nomination.
Yeah, he's the male Meryl Streep.
Yeah.
You know, he really is. And that's not to say he's not fantastic, but he's going to get nominated for basically whatever. Gary Oldman for his turn as Winston Churchill in The Darkest Hour. And Denzel Washington, another, like,
I didn't even know he had a movie out.
Yeah, Roman J. Israel Esquire. That's the film he was nominated for. A pretty lukewarm reception, if I remember correctly. I didn't get the chance to see it. He just kind of got nominated. I don't think people were really expecting it, but hey, Denzel. We all love Denzel.
Yeah.
For the folks I expected one of them, did not expect the other. Timothée Chalamet for Call Me By Your Name.
Yeah.
Surprising. And well, not that surprising.
Not as surprising as the other one.
As Daniel Kaluuya for Get Out.
And
wow,
what an incredible performance that was.
Sure.
So understated, great. Very in the face.
Well, especially when he's British.
Yeah.
He's British and basically played the, you know, I couldn't have told you that he wasn't, I thought he was American.
From seeing the movie? Yeah, I had no idea.
Yeah. It wasn't until that I ended up watching the episode of Black Mirror that he's in that I was like, oh, what the fuck? That is definitely a natural British accent. That's not like.
He's not affecting that.
No. And, but Timothy Chalamet's had a great year. He's in two Oscar-nominated movies.
Yeah.
But the two movies that he appears in have both been nominated for Best Picture for multiple Oscars. So he's in Call Me By Your Name. He is the protagonist of Call Me By Your Name. But he also appears in Lady Bird as one of her amorous teens.
He's the smolder.
Yeah, he's the dude. He's like the dude who seems to be like really into the Strokes and shit.
Yeah,
like,
you know? He's reading books at parties because he's just a prick.
I'm not gonna lie, like he's the guy that I think very young white suburban me wanted to be. Because it's just like, oh, he's not like...
He's sitting by the pool away from everybody. He's got a dark past, but not really.
Oh, shit. And I feel bad that I kind of like, I'm just like, oh man, I wanted to be that kid so bad. Now, in retrospect, I'm really glad I didn't turn out that way. But my pick is Gary Oldman.
Yeah, so is mine.
I think it's pretty obvious. They're going to give it to Gary Oldman, even though The Darkest Hour is a very average...
I really liked it. I gotta say, I was impressed with...
It was good.
I was impressed with the levity that they brought to such a dark time, because on paper, it's a very stuffy movie, and...
I think it still has some of that stuffiness, too. Like, it's very... Again, we
and it sacrifices authenticity, I think, for some of its lightheartedness. Yeah. Like, and, let's not forget how callous of a diplomat
Winston Churchill
yeah. was.
And, honestly, I'd rather... You know, if we could give another award to John Lithgow for his portrayal of Winston Churchill in The Crown, which I think does capture that callous nature. And that, you know, Gary Oldman disappears into every role he does, and he's a great actor. But I want to call this one the official Leo DiCaprio. Sorry, we didn't give this to you for
sooner.
An earlier, better role.
Yeah, like, exactly.
You know, there's a number of roles I would have rather Leo DiCaprio win that award for other than what he did for The Revenant, which was a good film. But why that one?
Yeah.
Because people were kind of tired of him not having an Oscar, I think, at the end of the day. And for Gary Oldman, the point stands is that they're going to recognize him. This is his legacy award. This is his prestige award.
He sat through enough hours in the makeup chair to finally earn that place on his pedestal.
Bingo. He at least he didn't have to eat raw meat.
Yeah. Like, or sleep inside of a horse.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's the same thing for Best Director when Marty Scorsese won for The Departed. Is The Departed a great movie? Yeah, I love The Departed.
The Departed, yes.
You're fucking caught. Yeah. It's a really great, fun. It's very Scorsese, but like, is that his best movie?
No,
it's no.
It's a great movie, though. He deserved it for that, for sure.
I think. Well, I mean, they gave it to him for The Departed because they should have given it to him for Raging Bull. You know, that's what I'm trying to say. At
yeah,
the end of the day,
that's fair.
So we're both for Gary Oldman. I would love to see Timothy Chalamet win. I really would love to see that happen, upset Gary Oldman, because he's young. He was in a very, fantastic movie, Call Me By Your Name. He did a great job. I would love to see him get that win. Daniel Kaluuya, if, you know, that would be fantastic as well. I don't think he's really got big expectations. I don't have huge expectations for him to upset Gary Oldman, Daniel Day-Lewis, and Timothy Chalamet, who are all probably favorites ahead of Daniel Kaluuya. But I want to say it right here and now. Fantastic performance from Daniel Kaluuya in Get Out.
Absolutely.
Do you have a favorite?
In this category?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that Daniel Kaluuya's performance was my favorite. I like the story behind Daniel Day-Lewis, the kind of creative partnership that he and P.T. Anderson have. He actually named his character in Phantom Thread Woodcock, Reynolds Woodcock or something like that. And that was kind of interesting to hear about, but I'm tired of Daniel Day-Lewis winning Best Actor. I mean, to your point, disappearing into roles, that's what he's known for.
Yeah.
And I could see it, but I think that if I could be overjoyed by an actor winning, Daniel Kaluuya winning Best Actor for that
performance. That'd be wild.
Yeah,
that'd be very great. I would not be upset with that at all.
I wouldn't be sitting down.
Yeah,
if that happened.
Well, speaking of shoe-ins, let's get to actress in a leading role. Sally Hawkins for The Shape of Water, Margot Robbie for I, Tonya, Saoirse Ronan for Lady Bird, Meryl Streep for The Post, and, in my opinion, the obvious winner, not my favorite, but the obvious winner, Frances McDormand for Three Billboards.
Yeah, I would agree. But I do think that there is a chance that Sally Hawkins could take it.
I would put the dark horse on either Saoirse Ronan or Margot Robbie.
That's fair.
I honestly would most want to give it to Margot Robbie. For I, Tonya. I saw I, Tonya. I think overall as a film, it's not as great as the sum of its parts. But I friggin' loved Margot Robbie's performance. I thought it was incredible. I really didn't know what I was going to get into going in, and I thought she really killed it. Frances McDormand is great. She's a legend, and her performance in Three Billboards is very good,
and it suits the legend.
It does.
Well.
It really does. I mean, she's a total hard ass. But my thing is that there's almost a lack of nuance at times to what she's doing. It's so very itself that it can't, like, she has this idea of who this character is, and she doesn't really deviate from it at all. And it's tough to talk about great performances like this because you don't want to sound bitter and you don't want to sound like, well, I just didn't like it.
Right.
But
I think criticizing it for a lack of dimensionality, I agree with that. I think that that's a fair criticism of her performance in it.
I think maybe it has more to say about the writer director Martin McDonagh more than it does about her. I'm not entirely sure, but I think she's gonna walk away with it almost hands down. Margot Robbie would be a great surprise. Saoirse Ronan would be a great surprise as well, but I think we're both saying Frances McDormand.
Yeah,
it seems like a very obvious choice.
Right.
Again, another obvious choice. Supporting role.
Yeah.
Actor in a supporting role.
Okay. It's going to go to Sam Rockwell for Three Billboards.
It is. He already has the Golden Globe.
And it was a good performance. He carried that aspect.
And to backtrack a little bit, Frances McDormand also won for Three Billboards at the Golden Globes.
Yeah.
Which isn't always they also got the SAG Award for Best Ensemble Cast.
I didn't look that up. I didn't see who won those.
Yeah, they got the SAG Award for Best Ensemble Cast, which is like the SAG Awards version of Best Picture.
Right.
But let's look at these other performances. Actually, two nominations for Three Billboards. Woody Harrelson's got the other one. And I'll be real with you. I liked Woody Harrelson's performance more. But Sam Rockwell's going to get it just for the sheer visceral nature of what he's doing.
Yeah. And it fit him very well.
It did. It's very Sam Rockwell. And he's a great actor. I sincerely love his work. I sincerely do. Willem Dafoe nominated. I would say he's my favorite.
I want him to win.
And he's the dark horse as well, I'd say.
I'm surprised that, yeah, it's a supporting role. Would you agree with that as for Willem Dafoe's character?
Oh, it is a supporting role. It is a supporting role. And I understand why saying otherwise might make sense, but the movie is not about his character is fantastic and he does a great job, but he is in a supporting role.
Right.
The girl and her mother are the main roles.
I just think that with what that movie is, with what the Florida Project, by the way, I don't know if we said the name, but
yeah,
with what the Florida Project is, Willem Dafoe's role in that movie was more, I just think it was more powerful as a supporting role than any of the other nominees.
And that's the thing for me as well. I agree with you wholeheartedly, is that, you know, with his supporting role, he was so strong in that movie that it felt like leading role.
Like talking about doing more with less.
Yeah, exactly.
That's Willem Dafoe all the way.
And I think that's that whole movie. I'll take a moment here to express utter disappointment that the Florida Project is not nominated for Best Picture. I think that they, the fact that they nominated both The Post and Darkest Hour is silly. The Post is their feel good Oscar bait. And at least it's good, you know, unlike a lot of Oscar bait, at least this is actually good.
Right.
The Darkest Hour is a solid movie. I don't have a ton of big complaints about it other than it doesn't really do anything particularly new or different or interesting with its source material. The Florida Project is great. It is fantastic. It is so good. And the fact that it did not get a Best Picture nod is... it really is just, it's just disappointing. It didn't get anything for the Golden Globes either.
Right.
It really didn't get much.
And that's the Academy's, you know, that's the Academy's foible showing.
Yeah.
Right?
I think we'll look back on the Florida Project, and I think with Sean Baker, Sean Baker's his name, the director, when you look back at his first film, Tangerine, I think that's another movie that they missed, another missed opportunity to really push a very original and very...
powerful
voice in film. I don't think this is the last we're going to see of Sean Baker. The Florida Project was too good for this to be his, you know, last movie that's going to be up, you know, up for potential awards. I think maybe his, whatever his next one is, who knows. I hope it starts getting some more recognition for him because he's fantastic.
So we got Sam Rockwell,
actor
in a supporting role, pretty much taking it.
I would really like Willem Dafoe, but I don't really see that happening.
Yeah.
Actress in a supporting role. Pretty interesting category here.
Yeah. I'm not sure. I only really think that one person is going to win, but I could see it going to anyone.
I mean, it would be I would love to see Octavia Spencer win again because she already has an actor best supporting role.
For which?
I want to say The Help.
Oh, okay.
A
nod or a
no? She has a win. She has a win.
Oh, okay.
She is an Oscar winner. And she had a well. It's, you know, it's interesting that they put her in for The Shape of Water. And I mean, it does. I guess it doesn't really matter all that much because she's a great actress. She did a great job in The Shape of Water, but. Earlier this year, Hidden Figures.
Right? Yeah.
People forgot about that movie pretty quickly. I really enjoyed that movie a lot. I very much enjoyed Hidden Figures. So, and I think that was a bigger role for her maybe than this. She had a lot more to do in it, and I enjoyed watching her more. I mean, Octavia Spencer is just a delight, and I mean, if she doesn't win, she doesn't win. People already love her.
Right.
Let's run back down the nominees here. Mary J. Blige.
For Mudbound. I have not seen Mudbound yet.
It is. I mean, that is probably the easiest one to go see because it's on Netflix.
That's true.
They bought it at Sundance last year. I have not gotten the chance to see it either, but it's interesting. Mary J. Blige, known female music artist.
Yep.
You know, interesting to be seeing her getting that Oscar nod. Let's see where that goes. Leslie Manville for Phantom Thread. Laurie Metcalf.
Yep.
Lady Bird from the Steppenwolf. here in Chicago. Laurie Metcalf. And the front runner, I think a lot of people would say, is Allison Janney for her role as Tanya Harding's mother in I, Tonya. I think this is the only one where I couldn't bring myself to say, oh, this one's going to win. I'm going to pick this one. I purposely did not pick the person that I think will win.
Right, because I think that I would not be surprised if it went to somebody other than what I... And I know that we're agreeing here on who wins, or on our
I'm pick. Saying Laurie Metcalf.
I'm saying Laurie Metcalf as well.
Yeah. And I think that's a lot closer of a race than people would think. The Oscar ballot we're using is here on the NewYorkTimes.com. It's a great interactive one, and it shows you the percentage of readers as they picked. You know, you click your pick, and it tells you the percentage of people that picked that.
And Allison Janney is the front runner with 38% of the vote, but then Laurie Metcalf second place, 27.
Yeah, and I think that's a lot. I think it's realistically a lot closer than people would think. Laurie Metcalf in Lady Bird is just so good. And so fantastic.
And that's the thing about that movie is that Laurie Metcalf's character and Saoirse Ronan's character, they're very similar. And they very much carry themselves in the same way. And so I'm not necessarily surprised. Laurie Metcalf's role is obviously a supporting role. But I do think that her performance is just as strong as Saoirse Ronan's. And I think she's going to win.
Yeah. They really... I mean, they feel like mother and daughter.
Yeah.
I watched it. And I, Tanya, it was... And Allison Janney is so great at just, and I'm going to say this in the nicest way possible, she's so great at just being a bitch. Like, she really is. She is so good at being mean, and I love her. It's so great, and watching her do it's fantastic. But I don't know. For me, at no point watching I, Tonya did I really feel like I was watching Tonya Harding's mother. I was watching Allison Janney playing Tanya Harding's mother.
Right.
That's, you know, whereas Laurie Metcalf, I disappeared into who she was. And I feel like that's what makes a really strong role is that you can watch this role and really feel a character.
Right.
Not just an impersonation, which I think Allison Janney, for as fun, you know, funny, darkly funny and strong as her performance in I, Tonya was, it wasn't something that really transported me.
Right.
Original screenplay,
tough.
We'll move through. Yeah, we'll get through some of these ones a little bit quicker. Original screenplay. I want to give a quick shout out to The Big Sick for getting nominated.
Yep.
Those nominees are The Big Sick, Get Out, Lady Bird, The Shape of Water, and Three Billboards.
It's a tough one.
I put it down for Get Out.
Yeah, and I can't argue with that. But I think Shape of Water is going to win.
There's a strong argument in my head. Although Three Billboards, I think, could easily take this one. Martin McDonagh is a fantastic writer. And for all my problems that I have with Three Billboards, the guy knows how to write a movie. I mean, at the end of the day.
And honestly, Lady Bird, that's the tightest movie maybe I've seen all year.
Yeah.
There's no fat on that movie whatsoever.
No, it's it doesn't meander. It moves at a pretty great clip. And for The Big Sick, how great is it to have a romantic comedy nominated? You know, like, I don't know. I feel like romantic comedies have really been all over the place for the last, like, decade or so. You had the rise of the Apatow romantic comedy, and that's kind of like... it's not really that good anymore, but The Big Sick was just so fresh, so original, and a real story, a true beautiful story, between it's Emily V. Gordon mm-hmm. and Kumail Nanjiani who are nominated. And it was so funny to go on Twitter and look at Kumail's Twitter feed and Emily's Twitter feed and just see how happy they were, because I really think they earned it. I think they really did something fantastic with The Big Sick. But I'm going to say Get Out is going to win.
Yeah, I'm going to go ahead and say Shape of Water. I think Shape of Water is going to walk away with it. But
I can't really be angry.
Let's break down like the genres of the nominees here. Big Sick, romantic comedy based off of a true story. Get Out, a social horror movie based on real social horrors. Lady Bird, a coming-of-age comedy in the vein of like Napoleon Dynamite. Shape of Water, a romantic story between a deaf and mute woman and a fish man.
Yeah.
And then Three Billboards Outside of Ebbing, Missouri, another kind of dark comedy revenge thriller.
Yeah.
It's kind of
very crazy.
For best original screenplay, that's a good category. That's a good set of nominees.
Nothing boring here. I'll say that much. Nothing boring. Everything listed for best original screenplay I think that might be outside of best picture the strongest category I've seen.
Yeah.
Adapted screenplay. We've got Call Me By Your Name, the Disaster Artist, the Disaster Artist, Logan.
Here we go. Whoa. Superhero alert.
Hey-o. Molly's Game, because Aaron Sorkin, I guess, has to be nominated for something.
Yep.
And Mudbound. I'm giving it to Call Me By Your Name, because I think this is going to be the cat. This or... best actor is what it's going to win. It's not going to get best picture, I don't think.
No.
I think it's pretty much going to sew up adapted screenplay.
Yeah.
And there's a chance for Timothée Chalamet. This is going to be its chance to shine.
Right.
What are you thinking? Call
I'm
me
going
by your name?
Call me by your name. Yeah. I couldn't risk anything else. But what would I have liked to see? Fucking Logan.
That would have been nuts.
Yeah.
I mean, because really, the only superhero movie that's ever won an Oscar, like a major category Oscar, was The Dark Knight for Heath Ledger's performance as the Joker, which was legendary, but also propped up by the fact that he had died. Also, 10 years since Heath Ledger's death.
R.I.P.
Side note.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think...
It's going to Call Me By Your Name.
Yeah, it's
going
to go to Call Me By Your Name. I will eat my hat if it doesn't.
You heard it here first. We're going to have it live on Facebook.
Yeah, I'll eat my hat. Foreign language, we're going to skip that one. We're going
to
move past that.
Animated visual effects? Are we skipping visual effects?
Yeah, let me touch on animated feature, because these fucking nominees. The Boss Baby.
Fuck.
Ferdinand.
Fuck.
And then The Breadwinner, I don't know what that is.
Yeah,
I'm
going
to be honest with you. Loving Vincent, which is the world's first painted movie. I feel like that deserves a shot.
Put it in its own category.
Yeah. I mean, you know, at least they're doing something interesting. And then Coco. It's going
Pixar,
to win.
Yeah.
Sew it up. It's done. Coco was great, but like, it's just, it was put up against nothing. It was put up against virtually nothing.
The fact that Disney tried to, copyright the term Dia de los Muertos away from the entire, Mexican culture, notwithstanding, Pixar is going to walk away with that one.
Yeah. Sound editing, skip it. Technical award, but still important. Thank you, sound editors. Visual effects.
Here we go.
I did see, tell me your pick, because I saw your pick.
Oh, yeah. War for the Planet of the Apes. It's walking away with it.
No.
It's walking away with it on all haunches.
I would love for it to, because I think War of the Planet of the Apes was one of the more underrated films of the year.
They had like 70 people dress up in those motion capture.
It's crazy.
I want to see motion capture get Academy recognition.
Well, I mean, we'll have to wait. It's the first person that's going to get any recognition for it is going to be Andy Serkis.
Right.
For whatever. He should have been nominated probably, what?
Golem? 2001?
Yeah, 2001. Yeah, 2001. Yeah, 2001, 2000, like, early 2000s, over 10 years ago, he should have, like, 15 years ago, he should have won an Academy Award, but didn't, because people didn't understand what they were looking at, and now we get it, now we understand where we're at.
Right.
Blade Runner's gonna run away with it.
Really?
I legitimately think Blade Runner's gonna get it.
Yeah. Well, there are some absolutely incredible sequences in that movie.
Yeah. But, I mean, War for the Planet of the Apes, pound for pound, in terms of, like, the work that went into creating... I mean, it's endemic to the movie. The visual effects are endemic to the movie. Otherwise, you don't have War for the Planet of the Apes. So, but maybe, realistically, it should win.
It's kind of a different vote, though. Because I think that Blade Runner's visual effects are served to be more of, like, a mind-bending situation that suck you into this futuristic world. Whereas,
sure,
War for the Planet of the Apes is kind of doing the opposite. It's not trying to mesmerize you. It's not trying to distract you or like question your concept of what's actually happening. It's supposed to look real. It's supposed to put itself into a realistic setting.
Yeah,
right?
I mean, it's the issue of trying to convince people to convince people that they should care about a movie about literally like anthropomorphized apes,
right?
And again, I think totally underrated, totally underseen. I think people really are going to look back on that Apes trilogy, this revival one, and be wowed that a blockbuster films could pull off what they pulled off.
I do think that's an interesting category, though.
It is a very interesting category. Are we doing film editing?
Yeah, let's do film editing.
Yeah, let's film editing.
I like your vote here.
I have a protest vote of sorts.
Because, let me hear it.
And it's for a movie that I didn't even think was one of the best of the year, necessarily. I really enjoy it now more in retrospect after I've watched it a few times. But let's go. Tell us about The Front Runner.
The Front Runner is going to be Dunkirk, because the editing that went into that movie puts you in the shoes of a soldier at Dunkirk as you're trying to escape the Nazi forces. And the biggest part about that movie that puts you into that setting is the editing of the movie. It's the shot, it's the quick cuts, it's the shaky cams, it's the crazy short, like, airplanes screaming overhead.
I would say it's in terms of, and you know, I did not choose Dunkirk, but I'm going to speak to its credit. It's probably the most visually important war film since Saving Private Ryan in terms of defining the look of battle.
Right.
And, you know,
capturing the sort of wide-eyed just craziness of it all.
Yeah, where you know, I mean, looking back at Saving Private Ryan, that introduced Janusz Kaminski, you know, literally defined the way, changed the way, and helped define the way we look at how war is shown on film. And I think Dunkirk, we're going to look back at that as well. And it's fantastic narrative editing.
It is
incredible narrative editing. It's weird to watch a movie like Dunkirk that doesn't really have a plot.
Yeah,
it's like it's a very general plot. It's we need to get off of this fucking beach.
Yeah,
like, you know, that's it. But it tells little stories in of itself, and you're never lost as to where you are or why.
And in the more intense sequences where the people are getting shot at and shot down, some of that stuff is debilitating, honestly.
Yeah,
I walked away from that movie kind of, I didn't realize it at first, but it crept up on me. There's some shocking stuff in there.
Yeah, you had an experience, and yeah. I think the film editing in conjunction with the directing and everything like that is it's all part of that. I personally picked Baby Driver, and the reason I did is because Edgar Wright is a master of using editing in interesting cinematic ways
to define his style.
Right. He is making a movie. It's almost like he wants you to be aware that you are watching an edit, because he's winking at you the entire time. He did it in Shaun of the Dead. He did it in everything. Shaun of the Dead, Hot Fuzz, The World's End, Scott Pilgrim. There's all these visual jokes, visual gags, things that are little nods to you saying, hey, I'm here.
I know what
too.
It's like. Yeah.
Yeah, like we're having a relationship here. And Baby Driver, for all my issues with some of the story and some of the acting elements, is incredibly well edited, especially with the whole premise of this being basic like a heist musical.
Yeah.
With the soundtrack and everything, it's done perfectly. It is so seamless, and it's just, in addition, the action sequences are perfect. These are some of the best car chases I have ever seen.
Absolutely.
Committed to film. It is so, so good.
And the reason that they're so good is the editing. And there's the story behind it, right? I don't know if you want to touch on it.
Yeah, but I mean, this movie was edited live to the music.
Real time.
So they were like actively editing the movie as they were shooting it,
right,
which is incredible and incredibly difficult, because the music, it had to sync up, otherwise the movie falls apart. The whole charm of Baby Driver is this thing that this kid is listening to the soundtrack and you're part of it, and it's both diegetic and non-diegetic. To define diegesis briefly, it's kind of like, are the characters, is it the soundtrack, or is it the characters are actively hearing something? And in this, it's both.
Right.
It's both diegetic and non-diegetic sound, which is really fucking cool. And I think that's the best part of it. So film editing, I really, really, really want Baby Driver to get the nod. I think Dunkirk is the probable choice, but I'm putting my money down on Baby Driver.
And I don't think that anyone would blame you for it. Baby Driver was the editing.
Even think about blaming me.
Oh, I thought about it.
You son of a bitch.
I still might. And I'm going with Dunkirk. Because fuck you, Tom.
Oh,
fuck
God.
Your protest.
This is bullshit.
He's all gone.
Right. He's. Hello, this is Frank. I'll be stepping in for Tom Hush.
Long time contributor here, Frank.
Yes, a long time. First episode.
He's got no last name, as far as I know.
Frank.
You look a lot like Tom. I'll say it.
He's, you know, he's a close friend of mine.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. And I don't know why that would mean that we would look similar to each other. I mean, we're just, I think we became friends.
Well, you know what they say. You spend enough time with people you really know, you start to look exactly like them. That's something that is said all the time.
I hope that's very true for you and I. I want your face. You got a nice face there, kid.
Well, maybe we could do like a face-off thing, because I, funnily enough, want yours.
Oh, that's enough for me today.
All right, let's get Tom back in here. Producer, get him back.
Ugh,
yeah, that's
God.
Right. Sit back down. Come on.
Jesus.
We got a show to do.
It's not, you know. All right, original score. original score. Solid group here. Dunkirk, Phantom Thread, The Shape of Water, Star Wars The Last Jedi, and Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri. I'm giving it to Phantom Thread because Johnny Greenwood.
It's incredible.
It's a great score. Dunkirk is the front runner here in this New York Times poll. It's got 40% of the vote. And I think the reason is because they went for this really subtle route. Like, you're not aware of what the music's doing to you in that movie, which is really fantastic. But I was a little bit more of a fan of Phantom Thread. I'm throwing it down for Phantom Thread because I think it might get the nod here.
And I am inclined to agree. It suited the movie very well. The sort of captured the pomposity, if you will, of like the high fashion scene in London. It did a really good job of that.
Yeah, and Johnny Greenwood, I don't know if he won for There Will Be Blood, but There Will Be Blood is my favorite film soundtrack of all time. I love it. I listen to it on its own. I want to point out, total snub here for a great movie that I watched again recently, Good Time. The soundtrack for Good Time, which is done by the artist, you may or may not have heard of him, Wonnatrix Point Never.
Mm-hmm.
I can't remember his real name, but Wonnatrix Point Never. He made the most anxiety-inducing soundtrack of all time. I swear to God, there is no way watching that movie. It's so incredible. I feel like it's in such harmony the way that the soundtrack for Good Time works, because it just propels you along and it gets you into this world that you're in, this very gritty, neon-soaked New York. And I Wonnatrix Point Never, I just want to give him an honorable mention because he really deserved to get something. For someone to listen to that soundtrack and just be like, you know, oh God, it's exactly what you would hope a movie soundtrack would be like, where it is all about what's happening.
But of course, instead of something like that, which is something new and relatively new ground, you get John Williams's The Last Jedi soundtrack.
Which was great, but it's fucking Star Wars.
Exactly. It's like, what do you...
It's all variations on kind of similar themes.
Yeah, you want it to fit a mold, which...
It does.
And it is the mold, yeah. But I think that I'm going to go with, not really an outsider, it's got the second most number of votes, but I think that, because we're not going to be talking about sound editing, I think Shape of Water could win as well.
Yeah, beautiful score.
Yeah, it is great, but the sound editing in that movie is really why I'm putting the vote in there, because the going underwater and just the way that they captured that, where it all sort of gets muffled and...
Yeah.
And I just thought that was a breathtaking aspect of that movie.
All right. I think the last one we're going to cap it off here with is cinematography. And for me, there's very little doubt in my mind, although according to this New York Times poll, it's not what I would have expected. The nominees are Blade Runner 2049, Darkest Hour, Dunkirk, Mudbound, and The Shape of Water. I do want to say that for Mudbound, I believe that is the first woman to ever be nominated for a cinematography award.
I'm not familiar with the history of that, but...
Yeah, it's the director of photography is Rachel Morrison, and she has made history as being the first female cinematographer to ever be nominated for an Academy Award. So that is very important. That is very, very important, and I can't believe it has taken this long because there have been great female cinematographers all throughout the history of film. I'm going to give it to the most decorated, Roger Deakins. I'm going to give it to Roger Deakins for Blade Runner 2049, because it's just stunning and beautiful, and he's won before, but I really think he deserves something for Blade Runner 2049.
I agree. And looking at the votes here,
a lot of Dunkirk.
Yeah. I understand, I guess, but I'm gonna go with Blade Runner as well.
I mean, I will say this, that Dunkirk did have an incredibly distinct look to it.
Which is difficult. There's a glut of war movies every fucking year.
That look all the same.
Right.
So I think they really made it look great. But for me, it's Roger Deakins. Far and away for me. Because Blade Runner, if it's going to win anything, I think it needs to win for cinematography.
Right. It's such a visual movie, just like its predecessor.
True.
And it progresses it as well. I think that in a lot of ways, it is a step forward for that series.
Yeah, it really is. All right. So that's pretty much going to do it
for
our nominations and our picks. But we want to do something real special here. This is our first Oscar season as a podcast talking about movies, and we want to make it something special. So we have decided to make an Oscar bet against one another.
Yes. And the rules of which are, so you've heard it for yourself, we've disagreed on a few of the picks. So in the event that one of us is wrong or both of us are wrong, we will be engaging in legal side bets.
Yeah, we're going to be doing some side bets on a few of these categories that we want to kind of double down on, as it were. If we really believe that we're going to be right on something, we'll make some side bets. But the overall bet is going to involve you. So we have narrowed it down to about 10 of these categories. We got 10 categories that we're going to be facing off head-to-head in. Now, granted, some of these we have the same picks on, so I'm guessing it's going to be it's going to have to be a tight one. But we're going to be going for the best of 10, see who, on the whole, does better out of those 10 categories. And whoever loses is going to have to watch a really bad movie every single day for the week following the Oscars.
And that is going to be a long week for you, Tom.
Oh, wow. Yeah. I like your ballsiness, you dumb son of a bitch.
Oh, it's so cute.
I know.
Watch you sit there in your chair.
I'm going to... Oh, my God. I will send you a little thing of fucking, like, Act 2 popcorn. Wow. Every day, something for you to eat.
That would be nice.
Except I'm going to take a shit in it.
Oh, Jesus. Usually you got to pay extra for that.
No, no, it's this is going to be a very fun, friendly wager. And the part that involves you, the listener, is you are going to get to decide what movie that is. When this episode goes up, this is going to be up. It'll be Friday. Today we're recording, it's Thursday, so it's going up tomorrow for us. We're going to have a poll where you can nominate bad movies that loser will have to watch every day for a week. And to keep ourselves honest, we will publish
our ballots.
Yeah. We're going to have our ballots out there, who we picked, so that you can keep us honest. No switcheroonies.
Nope.
No BS.
No last second write-ins. Pens are down.
Yeah, it's over. We've already said who we're picking. It's over. So
it's all over for you, Tom.
Shit. So you can go on there and
the top seven most voted for films will be.
Well, no, it's gonna be one film. No, wait.
The top seven for the week, I mean. Right? Because there's going to be different... People are going to be able to submit their own movies into the poll.
Right.
So the top seven will be the seven movies that have to be watched for that week.
Yeah, absolutely. So those are the ones. So please, pick well.
Or don't.
Don't, yeah. Or just actually pick the worst.
Pick the worst ones that you can find.
Do whatever you want. But in order to vote on this, it's going to be on Facebook. So head on over to facebook.com/NoCoCinemaPodcast. And that's where you'll be able to find the thread. You can vote. You can discuss. You can conspire against us. Whoever, you know, really put us through the ringer here. Make us watch something terrible. Because we deserve it. If we lose, we deserved it.
If we guess our Oscar picks incorrectly... That there's a special place in hell
for
that.
Us. because we're experts,
and you'll get to send us there.
And I'm gonna put you to this. Whoever loses, they need to show like a video or something. I want you to post it on the Facebook of you watching it. Like, I want you to prove that you watched it.
Sure. That's
when
fair.
You watch it.
Oh yeah, Connor, I was gonna say you seem so. You seem very confident that it's gonna be me. When I know for a fact, my good sir, that it's going to be you.
Jesus. And also, we will be making some side bets throughout this week. You know, as we get closer and closer to the Oscars, as we want, you know, consider some things, see how things shake up. We're going to start making some side bets on some of the categories that we disagree on, because obviously if it's one that we agree on, we kind of live and die by the sword there.
Right. We disagree on five of the
categories. So
there's
at least five possible side bets we can make, and these will be non-movie related, and we will challenge each other to them publicly so that you can know all about what's going on. So, like we said, head on over to facebook.com/NoCoastCinemaPodcast and vote on that thread. Okay, we need you to vote on that thread. Otherwise, I'm basically going to make him watch Pauly Shore movies. I'm going to find seven movies that feature Pauly Shore,
please,
or maybe just Encino Man for 7 days straight.
That's interesting.
That's
one movie you have to watch it seven times in a row.
That's a possibility. If you guys pick one movie, if you decide that there's one movie you want one of us to watch for 7 days in a row, I'd be open to that.
No Phantom Thread, people. It's gonna be there.
Tensions are incredibly high. All right. So thank you so much for listening to this very special Oscar mini episode. We will still have our regular episode up this Monday. We're going to be talking to the fantastic Gordon McAlpin, who is the creator of a little web comic called Multiplex, something that I've been reading for years. Way before I started doing this podcast. I am so fantastically excited to be talking to him because he is turning that webcomic into a short film. It's coming out on the 29th, on the day that we have the conversation. So you'll be able to listen to the conversation, watch the short, or watch the short, listen to the conversation, however you want to do it. It's going to be great. So be on the lookout for that this Monday on the 29th. Connor, good luck to you, sir.
And good luck to you, sir, as well.
The Game of Games.
Welcome to the Game of Games. We do have full goblets of wine here, and we will, as is our tradition, we will cross arms and drink from each other's cuppets, drinketh from one another's cup.
Oh, God. Did you have to pick Merlot?
Yeah, we both have terrible table manners, don't we? This is an audible drink.
All right. See you guys on Monday. This is No Coast Cinema here on WGN Plus. We are your guide to cinema here in the city of Chicago and all around the world. I'm Tom Hush.
And I'm Connor Cornelius.
And we'll see you soon.